Welcome to the Sons of Mjolnir podcast.
The Sons of... what?
This isn't your Sons of Macaroni, yeah!
The Sons of Mjolnir?
This is Sons of Mjolnir,
Welcome back to the Sons of Mjolnir. As always, I am one of your hosts, Fat Thor, and today I am joined by a very special guest. You may know him as the writer of such books as Underwars, The Poodle of Potter's Peak, Mort, and most recently, and I would say most notably, the co-creator and writer of Tart, which is going to be getting a new prestigious hardcover release that's on Kickstarter right now, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. I welcome Kevin Joseph to the show. Kevin, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm super excited to have you here.
No, I'm pumped. I'm always here to talk to another Thor fan, basically. Yeah, I popped on, saw the stuff behind you, and I'm like, all right, we're here.
I say we're friends already. It's cosmically aligned. Also kind of similarly to your artist that you work with. So like I said, you are the co-creator of the book Tart, and that's going to be written by you, obviously, but drawn, lettering, colors, all is going to be your partner, Ludwig, and I know I'm going to butcher the last name, Saul. And I mean, man, we're going to get into Tart and, you know, all that stuff, get more nitty gritty in it. But just before we get started with it, I just got to say, I really enjoyed this first volume. I got to read the first volume for this interview here. And I mean, it just, your guys' partnership, I think, is just so good. Like your writing paired with his art and like how the art changes from issue to issue, depending on the time, like just really, really great. So like I said, before we get started, I just got to shout you guys out. The Tart is amazing. And I think your guys' partnership together is really great.
I really appreciate that. We like to say that we're co-parenting our daughter, our time traveling daughter. And yeah, we both, you know, but honestly, there really isn't that many, we don't really go back and forth that much. We kind of just say, hey, you want to do this? And the answer is either yes, and we do it, or not really, and we find another avenue, which is kind of fun about, you know, we find it together, which is really great. It is a true co-creator partnership. Ludo has as much of the authorship of the book as I do. I say often, I speak English, it's his second language, so I become the face and voice of it, but that's not really fair because so much of it comes from Ludovic's heart and soul and brain and especially hand.
Like I said, I think, and I also think too, just from doing a little bit of research I did on you guys, I think you guys have a very interesting writer and artist relationship, which I definitely want to get into more in like the whole creative process with you guys. But to kick it off and to start this whole thing off, typically what we do here is we kind of do a comic origin sort of thing. And, you know, I want to know more about you, and I'm sure the viewers and listeners want to know more about you as well. So I want to take it back just a little bit before we start getting into all this great nerd stuff about Tart and your guys' relationship. So you've said that growing up that you've always just had this kind of innate desire to tell stories. And you've mentioned that when you were in middle school that you wrote for your middle school paper doing sports sections. You would write short stories. You actually even wrote a novel in eighth grade, but quit after three pages.
Okay, good. I was going to say, but let's not give live 13-year-old Kevin too much credit there. That was about 2.5 pages of some mind-boggling rip-off of Stephen King. And then I decided this is too hard, but true. I tried
more of a novel than I wrote at 13, but I just thought that's super interesting. And my question on top of all that is, so where do you think that this kind of innate desire for storytelling really came from? I mean, obviously I'm sure it's from a bunch of different kind of mediums, but again, being 13 and being like, I'm going to write a novel like that, obviously, like you said, is just kind of innately in you. So where would you say that maybe came from?
I was always a kid who got in trouble in school for daydreaming.
Me and you both, man. I feel you 100%.
Yeah, I remember like literally sitting at a parent teacher in like I think third grade, and the teacher being very nice to my mom and be like, when Kevin's paying attention, he does well and he's a nice kid and he doesn't do this on purpose, But there are times when I look at him and he's somewhere else. And I have to say his name like 10 times to get him back here. So I think there was always some part of me who could get caught up in some fantasy of the real world more so than sitting and thinking about the real world. It was more, it just kind of a, the world took off into other ways in my brain. And as a little kid, I couldn't control it in any way, shape or form. Mm-hmm. So I think that might be. Now that the novel came up, actually, I'll drop this. I just saw a thing about Gen X, which is my age, being like the people not to mess with, because, you know, we had keys to the house at 5 and, you know, we're feeding ourselves at 7 and every one of them evaded a kidnapping attempt. And the novel that I tried started from what I think was me evading a kidnapping attempt. There was a really weird guy who drove past me and stopped and like stared at me like there was something wrong.
Yeah.
And I kept walking and I saw him go around a block and come back and slowly go past me. And he did this like 3 times. And the last time he did it, I booked it behind somebody's house and drove and like ran up there. I was walking up to the arcade and I was like, I'm gonna hide in the movie theater for 2 hours. So that novel was kind of me kind of trying to come to terms of what kind of who was that crazy guy?
Yeah.
And after 3.5 pages, I decided it wasn't that interesting, I guess. But
I mean, that sounds interesting to me. I'm interested. And I mean, that's a crazy story, man. I'm glad, obviously, that, you know, nothing came of it. But man,
you're preaching to the choir on that one. But I don't know. I honestly don't know what the deal was, but it was definitely it wasn't right, whatever it was.
Yeah. You could just feel like something's not right. Which, I mean, like I said, I don't know. That sounds like a good premise of a story to me. Have you ever thought of maybe picking that up again, picking up those 3 pages, dusting them off?
It's super weird because, you know, you come at that quote unquote outline in your head as a 13-year-old. And then you think back at the things you thought were going to be cool. And you're like, it's so immature. I'm not sure that I could come to it as an adult writer and respect it the way that I need to.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt it, but hopefully it'll fill into something else. You know, the feelings that I felt, I think, I do channel into things when I want to have a sense of not fear, just creeped out. Like there's something wrong here, even as a, you know, not a young kid, I was 12 or 13, but it was definitely a, you know, hair on the back of your neck. This isn't, whatever this isn't right. So I try to use that feeling probably, but the actual outline got a little silly.
Well, I mean, like I said, I think that that's a very strong premise. And like you were saying, not necessarily like in your face, like, oh, scary, but just like that feeling like, oh, there's something not quite right here. And I think you can definitely see that in your work in Tart, especially. Like I said, unfortunately, I've only read the first volume, which I am, as soon as we're off here, I'm going to do the rest of my homework. But with the your demons and like the kind of creatures that you have there, the one that I'm thinking of specifically is when she goes into like the cave and it's like the spider demon monster that the feeling you're describing was very much like what I was getting. It was like, okay, something's not right here, you know what I mean? So again, I can see that translated in your work for sure.
Yeah, that one was fun. And again, I've got to get more credit to Ludo. That was one of those cases where it was like, all right, I have this idea of the demon kind of having a webbing and kind of being like a spider, because obviously, you know, there's something ancestral about our fear of spiders. I mean, they obviously millions of years ago, spiders killed a lot of us, or we wouldn't be that scared of them, snakes, gators, etc.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like, I kind of pick up the scariest animals and kind of like, well, what if the demon had affects like this? And Ludo sent me 2 like amazing designs and he said, which one do you like better? And I was like, man, they're both great. I have no idea. And then the next day he sent me, I believe, a 3rd design, which is the one we ended up with. And it was kind of like, oh my god, how could you outdo the first 2, because the other 2 were perfect as well, you know?
Yeah, Well, I would love to see those other designs because I think the one that you guys landed with was super good. And it's good in the sense of, like, again, similar to like the feeling that we're just talking about. Like, it's not in your face, like, oh my God, crazy spider person, but it's like subtly creepy, like the almost blank face with the eye. Like, oh man, it was good. I loved it. I really loved that creature. But going off of that and your kind of innate, you know, desire to tell stories and, you know, your kind of overactive imagination, I guess you could say, as a kid. So where did the kind of comic love start? When did you start picking up comics? Or can you even remember maybe your first comic that really, like, oh, this is the form of storytelling that I relate to?
It's all due to Chris Claremont and Uncanny X-Men. I think it's 197. It's like the second Nimrod, the second time that Nimrod attacks the X-Men. And I don't know, kid handed me that and said, you should read this. And it was everything I needed in the world and had no clue existed. It was, you know, they're fighting this robot. It's Kane Marco. If you haven't read it or in a while, they're sticking out Kane Marco at a. That's my dog. It's going crazy.
Oh, no worries.
I'm gonna take off her collar.
We love dogs over here. That's no worries at all.
Yeah, there we go. So she can go crazy if she wants. Not jingle jingle. They're sticking out Kane Marco, making sure that, you know, the Juggernaut doesn't do something at a bank. Mm-hmm. And then Nimrod shows up and attacks Juggernaut. And so the X-Men are kind of like, what do we do? He didn't do anything wrong. And I mean, Rogue ends up taking Nightcrawler and Colossus's power to beat Nimrod. And I'm just like, I don't know what this is, but this is, you know, just put it in my veins. This is the best.
I need more of it right now.
from that moment on, I was an X-Men fanatic, and, you know, tried to catch up on, you know, things, Batman, of course, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Tick, Avengers, you know,
just kind of snowballed from there. It's funny that you mention Claremont's Uncanny, because we've had a couple of writers on here who have shouted out, you know, Claremont's X-Men. I think that's just one of those books, like you were talking, like everyone's innate fear of spiders. Like Uncanny X-Men by Chris Claremont is one of those books that's like, if you're a nerd and you're into comics, you love, like, you have a love for that, or like that sparked something in you. I feel like even if you didn't love it, there's something, like, it sparks something in people. It's just such a great book, and perfect book to enter your comic journey into.
It really is. And then, you know, you run into stuff that starts speaking to you as well. I remember quickly getting to Matt Wagner's Grendel. And just, what is this? What, you know, like, and then you go back to Alan Moore, and, you know, it grows and builds.
It grows and evolves. And I mean, I know, like we were just saying, you know, I started your typical superhero stuff, and then, like you're saying, you start going to the comic shop and you're like, oh, what's this? And like, oh, what's this? Oh, there's horror comics. Oh, there's, you know, crime thriller comics. It's so easy to just fall down that rabbit hole. And lucky for us, you never came out of that rabbit hole, because now you're writing comics. And I'm curious, so you have this innate desire to tell stories, you start, you know, jumping into the comic side with X-Men and all that. So where was the jumping off point from then, and then to Underwars in 2011? That was your first book, correct, if I'm not mistaken?
It was the one I was working on when I was introduced to Ludo. Yes, my buddy Chris is a really awesome cartoonist. His art is, you know, very two-dimensional, funny, goofy stuff, and he always used to paint these monkeys in underwear. And, you know, here's the thing. If you're a writer who can't draw, you always figure out how to just hitch yourself to somebody with a good idea. And I was like, these feel like something you've seen. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've seen a monkey in underwear, and where have I seen it? And I'm like, you should tell a story around it. And he's like, well, you know, maybe I will one day. And I'm like, no, you should tell a story around it. I'll help you. It's like, you know, and he came to me one day and he was like, I've got the idea. They're a failed Nazi experiment. And I said, oh, like Hellboy. And he went, no. It's the Nazis. They tried to get monkeys. They put the underwear on them and they can talk, and then they abandoned them after. And I'm like, no, that's literally Hellboy. That's his exact origin. And he went, crap. I said, don't worry, we'll make something else up.
Yeah.
And so we were working on that, trying to get it out, when I got an email from a friend who had met Ludo and seen his amazing art. And he was working on a comic that he called Hell Strawberry. Mm-hmm. And it was about a time traveling demon hunter who, you know, more of a tank girl feel. It was very kinetic and chaotic and gorgeous. And she said he had written himself into a corner and didn't know how to get out. And like I said, you got to hitch yourself to wagons. I was like, if I can figure out a way, this art is too beautiful. This concept is too cool. Mm-hmm. And I was stuck. I didn't think I would be able to work in what he had done, because it was almost like a sitcom. There were these multiple characters. They all had relationships that I wasn't there at the origin of, so I couldn't really mm-hmm. figure it out. And I woke up about 3 days later after I'd given up, like I'm going to miss this opportunity. And I had the vision of a young lady waking up in an alley. And she knew when she woke up, not where she was, not when in the world she was, but she knew she had been sent to stop a demon from doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And I went into my room, the bathroom, with my phone, and I typed that in, typed like three paragraphs of what that first plot might be. Not what this comic is, but that just straight plot. I went back to sleep. I woke up the next day and I reread it, and I still thought it was cool. Because sometimes you wake up and from a dream, the best dream I ever woke up, I was laughing. I went over, I wrote it down, I went back to sleep. The next morning I woke up to see my brilliant idea, and I had written down meteorites equal boogers.
That's great. I would read that book.
I have no idea what that meant. And I just,
here's equal bookers.
It was the most, like, I was so proud of myself in that. I guess I was still in the dream. I didn't understand it. I don't know what. So they don't all work out, but if you reread Tart, you know, issue number one, that first scene is that first page is literally what I woke up with in my dream. Then I wrote the plot of issue one and I sent it to Ludo to see if he liked it. And he liked it and he said, yeah, let's do this. And then we went through and we had like a 3-month process where we had the bones of issue one, but we didn't have a series. So, okay, why is this girl doing this? What is she trying to do? What, you know, like, I think my first idea was it was just sort of like a villain of the week. She popped through time and stopped it. And I sent him a Ludo an idea. And he's like, nah, that person's not important. The demons would only mess up someone who would really hurt history. And I was like, oh, you're right. Okay. It's a bigger story. It's not a bunch of little stories. It's one big story with chapters that hopefully we can make feel like individual things. And then when you've read everything, hopefully it feels like one huge whole thing.
Mm-hmm. And I think you guys achieved that brilliantly, because again, from reading the first volume, that's one of the things that I really loved about it, is you are telling this kind of overarching story almost in the background, but each issue feels like its own little adventure. And I really love that. And like your first issue with the demon taking the little boy. And then in the second issue, it's her with the, like, the cavemen people. And again, like, you see the overarching theme working in the background, and like the, you know, the steps that we're taking, but we also get to spend time with our main character and like the adventure that she's going on. And I think, again, that structure is something that I just personally really love. And I think you do it very well in this book. And I think it goes back again to your collaboration with Luda. And I think that, you know, the way you guys work together results in very good storytelling. And that's kind of leads into my next question. And we're talking about, you know, you and Luda first meeting and all that. So You guys met through a mutual friend that you met from standing in line to meet Neil Gaiman on your honeymoon, which I think mm-hmm. that's awesome. But
shout out to my wife who let me go to a Neil Gaiman.
But
you just have to ask nicely.
Yeah, say you just got to be really nice about it. And then we got to take a trip to the store afterwards.
Yeah.
But so something I thought was very interesting was when you were talking about you and Luda's relationship, you're saying that you guys are kind of very different in a lot of aspects. But something that makes it work is the belief in the idea. And that you, like you were just kind of mentioning. So when you first came onto this story, it was originally this Hell Strawberry, which is its own book now. Mm-hmm. But you basically came in and you kind of made a through line of all these ideas that he had. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious. I just think that's very interesting. And I think it just kind of shows the power of collaborative effort in comics, which we all know is very much a collaborative art form. So can you just talk a little bit about the power of a good idea and like how that can really create a great working dynamic to bring that idea to fruition?
Yeah, I think you have to be, and if you're in a collaborative artistic endeavor, be it in a band, making a comic, making a movie, I think you should be passionate about your ideas and have your ears or eyes wide open to how those ideas are either taken by the other person, put away, or hit back at you. There are times where I'll have an idea and I write it in the script and it feels fine. And then I get the artwork back and I realize that Ludo has taken what I thought was a 10 out of 10 idea. And now that I've seen what he's added to it, I really had a 6 out of 10 idea and he's made it a 9 out of 10 idea, because now I know I can either take some of my dialogue or narration out, I can change it, fix it, and peg it to what he's drawn. Mm-hmm. And now I feel like now we've got a 10 out of 10 idea. Now there's really no such thing as a 10 out of 10 idea in art, but you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. being open to what he changes and knowing that his artistic eye and training is 2 decades more advanced than mine. I am a storyteller. I've watched movies, you know, read books, tried to write my whole life. But he is going to lay something out on the page in a more dynamic and interesting way than I do. Mm-hmm. So what I need to do is look and realize why he made the change and how that affects what I wrote in the script and what I can do to now fit into his draft of our story. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just about listening to him, and he'll do things in that first issue, you know, a spoiler alert, Tart is kind of captured and she's in a weird almost bird cage. And I knew how Tart was going to get out of that bird cage. So I didn't write anything about what she was doing. I wrote the dialogue. I wrote the dialogue between her and the demon and the little boy. Mm-hmm. And I get the art back from Ludo and Tart is taking a bobby pin out of her hair and she's working the lock to try to pick the lock while this whole conversation is happening. I didn't write any of that. I never thought of that. And then what Ludo taught me from my own page is how much cleverer Tart is than I had imagined. No, mm-hmm. she doesn't know how she's getting out. So she's going to be working to get out of this while she's running another play. And I was like, oh, she's smarter. She's got a stronger survival technique. And this is me learning about the character through Ludo's art based on the script I sent him. And just being open to the changes and realizing, oh, that's better. And I've got to mm-hmm. now conform to that. And I try to feed it back to Ludo in the next script. So then he's going to come back. And it's this echo of an echo being a stronger piece, I believe.
Yeah, 100%. And that kind of goes off to something I wanted to ask you about as far as like changes and whatnot. I saw that. So I don't want to get too much into, which I haven't gotten to yet. So just not spoil myself and the people listening here, because I like I said, I want people to go and read this and experience it for themselves. But I saw that you were talking about, so like we were saying, there is this overarching kind of plot happening throughout all these individual adventures. And you originally had that kind of mystery and or plot be very much like religious allegory and, more in that vein. But Ludo actually kind of pushed back on that a little bit. And then you guys, crafted this new kind of mystery for the book. So I just was curious if you could talk a little bit more about that original kind of mystery that you had planned out. And also, again, just kind of going back to working with the differences and how differences in opinion between you guys result in better work, ultimately.
Oh, sure. The first idea was, and I think I wrote like a 4 or 5 page outline about what it could be. And I don't remember specific beats about it. It was going to be that the being behind all of this was Lucifer trying to make amends to God. Mm-hmm. It was Lucifer saying, now after, blank thousands of years, I realize I was wrong. I shouldn't have tried to revolt. And this was all his apology tour, basically. And Ludo just said, I just don't want to do anything that tied to an established religion. I want to play with demons and hell, but I don't want dogma. Mm-hmm. And I just want, okay. I don't know if I have another big story, and it took me a week or two to come up with the one that we're actually trying to tell, but it was more like, as a writer, okay, you've got an artist who's super excited to do this thing. I'm not going to try to ram a story down his throat that he doesn't want to draw, because then you're going to get boring, dull. I can't make a comic good. Mm-hmm. I can write a script as well as I can write it. Only the artist can make a comic good. And it was more about, okay, well, I've got to please the artist, because if I don't excite the artist, nobody is going to be excited by this. So I just went back to the drawing board. And now I am incredibly thankful, because I am not the most religious or studied religious person. Mm-hmm. So I would have had to done a tremendous amount of research. Whereas we're making up our own hell. We're making up our own, things. All I have to do is have a good memory. Oh, we said that hell does this. I can't forget that. But I don't have to worry about who Beelzebub really was compared to Lucifer. That's all out the window. It's all crazy make-em-ups now.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I personally love that approach to it. And I think the reason I asked this question is just because I find that very interesting. And again, going deeper into the whole relationship between writer and artist, mm-hmm. and the idea of believing in the idea as opposed to your idea. And
it's always better. I've had one comic that didn't come out because I really got a sense that the artist who will remain unnamed, it was just a paycheck. They were just going to draw what was on the script. They weren't going to put much effort into the backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And I could just see it. The actual artist is a very talented drawer. Mm-hmm. But I was like, all right, this is not what I want. I want a partnership like I have with Underwars, where Chris co-writes it and is bringing more to the thing than I can bring. I want a relationship like I have with Ludo, where, mm-hmm. We're in this together and we're both going to be really excited to do something we haven't seen before. And I said to Blake the other night, I am repeating myself. So hopefully I'm not boring anyone who watched that. It's we both kind of dare each other to do something more and more experimental. We're not afraid to take risks, which you will find out later. Mm-hmm. I won't tell you why or how, but we're both just kind of like, yeah, let's try it. Because if I write a script and it sucks, I'll just try again, you know? Mm-hmm. And if he draws the first 4 pages of his idea and it doesn't work, I'll tell him, I don't think it's working for this reason, this reason, this reason. And honestly, though, any of the stuff he's come to me asking, can I do this type of art, that type of art, he's shown it to me. And I've been like, yes, that is that brings us to, you know, I won't tell you I won't spoil it for you, but we have a piece at the 1936 Berlin Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
He drew that in a very monochrome, almost factory like art. It's mm-hmm. It's totally different. It's him. We have a piece that's more on the comical side, and he drew that almost like a cartoon. Same artist. And it's, you know,
yeah.
Issue two is fully painted because we sent the poor girl to an ice age, and he wanted the person to read it to feel the coldness of where she is. So he painted it. And I mean, like, to have an artist who's willing to change their entire style for an individual issue is insane.
Yeah.
And I'm always just like, yes, yes,
more. Yes, more, please, please, more. But I think that shows in the work, like you were saying, with this other artist who we're not going to name. Yeah. To me, I think a big part of it, and I think, you know, a lot of people out there would agree, is you have to have the passion and the love behind it. Like, again, you can be technically good at drawing, but mm-hmm. if there's not that passion behind it, people pick up on that. And like, while I don't necessarily, I can't identify like exactly what it is, I feel like you can just feel that when you read mm-hmm. something or, you know, watch something, that you can just tell the person behind it wasn't in it. And yeah. I think that goes perfectly into something that you talked about with Tart. And you said that if it's fun to make, it'll be fun to read. And I mm-hmm. think that's 100% true. So I'm curious, we're talking about, you know, your relationship with Ludo and how you guys are crafting your story. What's your favorite part about writing Tart? And, you know, whether it be the character or the kind of storylines you guys get to play with, like you were just saying with their demons and your version of hell. What's your favorite part about crafting these stories? Like, what makes you excited for more future stories?
It's those weird instances where the character makes a choice for you when you're writing it. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, like, you knew that you're bringing the character to, you know, a jumping off point, a fork in the road. And you knew you were going to have her turn right. And she still turns right, but then all of a sudden she tells you why and how, and it's different. That's the most fun thing to me, because it becomes almost like, or not organic, like inorganic, and like it's outside of me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I don't understand exactly how that happens, but it's super fun when it does.
Yeah, and that's super cool. We've had a couple artists kind of talk about that almost. I guess you could say like cosmic connection with the character that you're writing. And I always find that is so fascinating. And like you're saying, it feels like you get surprised as well when you're writing this. Like, even though it's coming from your brain, it's almost like this character actually is living and breathing and makes its own decisions, which then informs your storytelling, which I think that's just so cool.
Yeah, she's certainly smarter than me and more of a badass than me. So she figures out, you know, kind of how to survive these things. You know, like I kind of come into an issue knowing how she's going to be put into danger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you know that most of these are, you know, not every issue we do has a fight. And that's kind of something Ludo and I wanted to do, too, is there's going to be sometimes where you open up and there just isn't a fight.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to be surprising in that way. But, you know, it is an adventure. So most of the ones there will be some fight in some way. I kind of know how she's going to be attacked. But like the ballet of the fight, she does things that I don't know how to do. And mm-hmm. and it's like, oh, great. And then, like I said, with sending it to Ludo, he'll find things for her and bring in his own brain for this, and it's just pretty neat to see it grow almost outside of you, even though it's mm-hmm. not.
Yeah, 100%. So when you're writing, like, especially like fight choreography and stuff like that, like you said, you know how she's getting into the danger, but not how she's going to get out of it. Mm-hmm. So is that like just you were just talking about, you know, your vivid daydreamer and all that, is that like you're internally visualizing that as like you just, you know, just kind of visualizing where it's going, or how does that kind of process work?
One of the biggest fight inspirations I take coming into this is the Bourne Identity movies.
Okay. Yeah.
And so it's sort of like that ability to be attacked and just grab a magazine and turn it into a baton, that feeling of anything in the room is a weapon if you're smart enough.
Yeah.
So I know that she's been attacked and I know where she's at. So what could be in the room that we can use in a way? And then she's using it. Mm-hmm. So I think that's it. I don't have any type of a kung fu or boxing background, you know, like yeah. The last fight I was in, it was in seventh grade, and it was, you know, cause a kid thought I told on him. So he punched me in the back of the head.
Is that Kevin secretly a taekwondo master?
Yeah, no. I'm a lover, not a fighter, and I'm not even that much of a lover. Let's put it that way.
That's hilarious. But going off of that, and like we're talking about how you're writing Tart and like how, you know, it's almost like a cosmic connection when you're writing the story. I'm also curious about your monsters and your demons that you write, because I think that you're, again, I'm very early in, so I'm sure there's a lot more interesting ones to come about. But I was very impressed with how you wrote your creatures and your monsters. And it's not your run-of-the-mill, you know, demon kind of thing. And the one I want to talk about specifically, which I just, again, I loved this book, but I think this first issue, like, really sold me. And I was like, okay, like, this is me. And the reason was the demon in issue one. And again, I don't want to spoil too much for everybody because I want them to experience it themselves. But basically, this demon takes this kid and takes it almost as like to be his parent. And like, I think you had one line in the book specifically that says like demons are just like people in the sense of they lose things too. And I just thought that was very beautiful and just an interesting idea of playing with these monsters and creatures. So I'm curious, when you're crafting these demons and stuff, I'm sure it's like, okay, we need a bad person for this issue, right? Or something for Tart to go against. But where does the deeper layers come from when creating these creatures? And do you ever just like, oh, this one is going to be just the scary one, and this one's going to have, you know, some more meaning to it?
I think part of that very first issue, I was writing it really, really finding the story as I wrote it. I mm-hmm. really didn't have much of an idea where it was going. And I got to a pivotal point and I realized I was writing an incredible cliche. Like what I was writing was a very well often told story. Mm-hmm. But I thought instead of starting over, let's just blow up the cliche and do something surprising with a cliche that people will already know. That wasn't a plan. It wasn't like, I'm going to fool people by setting up one thing and doing the other. It mm-hmm. was, I got to the point where I actually, as a writer, went, oh, this is kind of well-worn and a little boring. So I just kind of, I went the other direction. And luckily, that is what Ludo said he loved about the script the most, is that I circumvented the convention that he expected. Mm-hmm. So the collaboration, well, that excited Ludo. So let's try to do that more often as we go forward in the writing. I think it's a lot of time. We have an outline for the whole series because it's time travel. I'm not smart enough to go back and forth and back and forth and get to the end where I need it. So I'm like, okay, this is where we are in the outline. This is the adventure I'm thinking of. And then a lot of times sometimes the demons are super smart and kind of the masters of their own domain. And sometimes they're super dumb and just kind of waddled into the wrong place at the wrong time. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they're part of a bigger plan that they might not even know about. So it probably just depends on the chapter, what we need as a series for it to do, and what would best affect the characters that we're throwing up against them. I think there is thought to it, but it probably just is just this weird thing that comes out of the plot more than mm-hmm. a real sit down and like, this time I want the demon to exude this. It just kind of like this plot needs a character that exudes something either that reinforces it or again circumvents it.
Mm-hmm. And I love that too. And I think it just goes back to what we were talking about the story not writing itself, but influencing itself and, you know, mm-hmm. taking you places that you never even really intended to go. But, you know, it just results in better storytelling. And I think, you know, you and Ludo, you guys just really hit it out of the park. And again, I had to bring up that first issue because that to me was just very much like, as a first issue, I think it did an amazing job with what a first issue should do. And that's introduce me to this world. Who is this person? And like, why do I care? And like mm-hmm. that, the demon and her saving the kid, I was like, okay, this is why I care. And again, it just really grabbed me. So again, I had to bring that up and ask you about that.
Well, it's the same thing for Ludo and I. We mm-hmm. we were on the same journey. We didn't know who she was. We uh-huh. didn't know how she acted. We didn't know what her purpose would be until I wrote the script and until he drew it. We knew none of these things either. So the first three issues is us meeting Tart and then more so than us introducing you to Tart.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And like I said, I loved my introduction. So that was volume one. That's what I've read. And that's kind of what we've been talking about here. But it was so good. You've sparked two other volumes from that. Mm-hmm. So I want to ask a little bit about the whole Kickstarter journey. So Tart originally started on Kickstarter, correct?
Of anybody who knows who we are, yes, there's a mangled history just before it. Real short, it was a webcomic to try to get anybody's eyes on it.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried with a very, very, very tiny publisher who had bigger ideas than infrastructure. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
So we had three issues and people were liking it, you know. Mm-hmm. It was tough to get them in people's hands, but those that we got to read it were giving us extremely positive feedback. So Ludo and I, we decided to pull it back, kind of learn from the publisher's mistakes, we hoped. I make a lot of mistakes, but I learn from them. I was seeing the same mistakes made multiple times, you know. I want to make new and interesting mistakes. I don't want to make the old mistakes.
Yeah.
So that's why we kind of took it back and started over. And that was right when Kickstarter was starting to become a thing that could help you make comics. It had, you know, it had been around for a couple of years, but it had just started to be that thing that comics were
mm-hmm.
starting to work on. And so that's why we went to the platform. And without it, I would not be talking to you. It is the only reason we survived as a series.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, we got, you know, shout out to all the people that jumped in early and backed it, because I'm so glad you guys got the opportunity to do more. And like I said, volume three is going to be released with this prestigious hardcover, which is what we're talking about today. That's what's the current Kickstarter is of. Mm-hmm. But you also have volume four that's going to be coming out soon. And I'm curious, we're talking about, you know, the story informing the writing and all that. Do you have, at least right now, a kind of idea of where this story ends? Or are you and Ludo just, we're going to keep writing as long as it's fun and as long as we have ideas? Or again, is there a kind of overarching, this is where we're going?
We have an end already decided. We know what we're going to. And when he gets to write F-I-N, I'm going to let him do fin on it, not the end, because come on, man, a Frenchman brought me this. He gets to do the fin.
Yeah.
When that story is done, the story will be done and the world will exist in case some other creators want to play in it. But the story of Tart will be finished. Good, bad, or ugly, the story of Tart will be finished.
Okay, I love that. So, like I said, so this hardcover, this prestigious hardcover, this is a great Kickstarter, by the way. I'm getting my hands on this for sure. But we're currently at 242 backers. You've already hit your goal. And mm-hmm. I mean, this hardcover is just, it looks beautiful. And you've done this before, correct? With the other volume as well.
Yes. Volume one came to us in a special weird circumstance, but we did kickstart volume two to match it as closely as humanly possible, so that when you throw it up on your bookshelf, you know, the cupcakes right in the right spot, our names are right in the right spot. You know, like I make a joke on the Kickstarter page, you know, like bookshelf vertigo, like how vertigo, like
I saw that,
you know, like the first printing, it looks one way, the second printing, it looks another way, the third printing, it looks a third way. And I don't even really care about stuff like that, but that is so egregious, it even bothers me.
Yeah.
So these are a set limited to 1,500 at the most for each volume. If we ever don't reach 1,500 for a volume, we won't. You say we do 1,300 of volume three, which I think we're going to hit 1,500. Mm-hmm. We'll never do more than 1,300 later, because I don't want anybody to have volume one, volume two, volume four and five, and not be able to get volume three.
Yeah.
I want people to be able to get it. And so I want 1,500 out there in the world. And if they, you know, if 1,500 people hold on to them and you can't get it, well, that's sorry. People love it enough that you can't have it. But we started with 1,500 of volume one. So we're not doing any more of any of the others. Even if we had a Kickstarter that we sold all 1,500, we just say, okay, guys, we're done.
Yeah,
we're done marketing.
Yeah, putting up the shop. But I love that, especially as a fan. And like, I always say that I'm like a fan / collector, in the sense of like, I collect, but not in the sense of like, oh, I'm gonna sell these or anything one day. It's just my own personal, you know, collection. But I, like you were saying, the vertigo problem, like that's something that I absolutely hate. And I'm a very aesthetic person. So like having them all nice on the bookshelf and how they fit together, I love that kind of stuff. So the fact that you take the extra time to even think about that, I think is amazing, and kind of shows the care and love that you guys have for these books and for your audience too. I can tell from you guys, and again, the research that I've done on you guys this past couple of days, like you care about your backers and the people who read your books, which I know everyone does, but you guys show it very well. And I think, you know, if you are someone who has been following Tart and has been on these Kickstarters, like you understand that, again, you guys are going to be giving us the best product you possibly can, both story and what's in your actual hand. Because again, we make the joke here, you know, we're the MCU boys, we're the Marvel boys, and everyone knows that Marvel's paper stock has not been the greatest lately. So again, I always appreciate when creators, especially indie creators, take that extra step and that extra care in the actual product of the book, as opposed to, you know, don't get me wrong, story's great, you know, but the actual physical product I think is important too. And you guys take extra special care with that. And I want to talk about too, some rewards you guys got going on here. You guys got some really cool awards you want to tell us about. So let's see, we got the catch up tier, which include, that's going to be everything, right? To catch you volumes one through three.
Yeah, the hardcover catch-up tier, I think it's $110 for all three volumes. And so you would get, you know, basically that's 12 issues of the comic. We did three in issue volume one, four issues in volume two, and this volume has five. So if we keep doing volumes, I might have like a 13 issue volume. I need to I don't think I can keep that pattern going, but
yeah, scale it back a little bit.
Yeah. But we looked at that, and you're going to get all of those issues, and hopefully people jump on it. And $110 is quite a bit of money. When I get a Kickstarter, I want to catch up, and it's up in that range. I really want to look at it. And my thing is, it's a decent amount of money, but if you wait till volume four, we're going to be looking at 140, 150, 160, depending on inflation. So I'm kind of want people to do it now so that it doesn't keep getting higher on them.
Yeah.
But I understand everybody's position is different. You know, I want you to get the things, but if you want to just try it out and do the $20 digital, you'll get all 15 issues of Tart we've done already in the digital. That's 364 pages of story. And that's without the additional you know, bonuses that some friends put in, and like Ludo's Hell Strawberry books we throw in. So it's probably going to be like 500 pages of comics for $20.
Yeah. I mean, that's an insane deal. And I mean, again, it just goes to show like you guys care about your readers and your backers. And again, you guys are putting in that extra work. And I think like, yeah, especially for us comic nerds, you know, that might be a little steep to some people, but you're getting your money's worth for sure. I'd say even more so than if you went and spent $110 on Marvel books. Like, you're getting way more quality for your buck with this Kickstarter, and especially with your guys's hardcover editions. Cause I mean, again, they're just really beautiful. I love the, oh, I'm pulling up the page again here. I went off of it. But yeah, the art that you guys, again, shout out to Ludo on the art and the way that the hardcover is crafted. I mean, I need this on my bookshelf immediately. I 100%. So this is going to end on the 22nd, correct? November 22nd is the Kickstarter?
I think November 9th. I think next week.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I'm thinking October 22nd for some reason. Yeah. We're in November now. Yeah. So November 9th. So this is going to be out before then. So everyone out there.
It'd be funny if it wasn't.
Yeah. Right. It's like, oh,
you,
sorry.
You drop it November 12th. Sorry, guys.
Sorry. Missed it. But you know, everyone.
We want FOMO. Without fear of missing out, it, you know, none of this works. So
exactly. Well,
if you,
I mean,
if you guarantee they miss out, we'll see how it works.
Say, yeah, we'll get them for issue 4 then. That will be our kind of marketing ploy.
long lead.
Yeah, long lead, baby. But again, everyone that's listening to this, please go and back Tart. You want this hardcover. Not only do you want the hardcover, but you want to read this story. Because again, we've been talking about this, and I really, really loved, and I'm not just saying that because you're sitting in front of me. I thought it was very unique. Interesting. I personally really enjoy the kind of supernatural sort of, you know, new interesting supernatural stuff. Again, like you were talking about, there's ways in which people tell these stories that it's like done over and over again, but I think the way you guys do it is very interesting. And then you add time travel onto that, it's like, what more can you really ask for? And speaking of time travel, I'm curious. So you've mentioned this in this interview and other places as well, that so in Tart, you guys are working with the Back to the Future sort of template of time travel in the sense of what she does in the past can affect the future, right?
Yes. Yeah. You can break our history.
100%. And I've seen that you've said like that's kind of your, you know, in a cheeky way, your loophole as a writer. So it's like, oh yeah, that was a mistake. Nope, it was just time travel.
Yeah. If I put something in 1946 and someone tells me that that statue didn't exist till 1954, no. Sorry. Some point a demon changed time. And when Tart was there, that is the way it worked. We did run into that though. The first issue of Tart, she was in New York, and I wanted her to go to a park. So I wanted her, because we knew we were going to throw her down a portal. So I wanted her to go to the C.S. Lewis statues in Central Park, the Alice, not Alice in the Looking Glass. Alice in Neverland. So I wanted her to go past that. And so, you know, I did my little research, and I think that was created in like 1965. Mm-hmm. Well, she was going there in like 1954. So we had to,
travel.
It's a little early to be really, really wrong. So we sent her to Washington Square and did it differently. But that's something that if I hadn't gotten it and I'd done it, I just, that was time travel, guys.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, like you said, time travel explains everything. But I'm curious with the time travel stuff, is there any kind of maybe you've done this already and I haven't gotten to it yet, or, you know, maybe in the future, is there any kind of specific event or something from history that you really want Tart to have influenced or, like, you know, play around with? We were talking before we started recording the Thor and Loki. I'm like thinking how they did the DB Cooper thing.
Yeah,
like something along those lines where like a mystery throughout history that can be explained with Tart. Do you have anything like that you really want to dive into?
Or I will say that you probably run into stuff like that, and it is the most fun part of the research for me, is going through some of history's mysteries.
I love it.
answering how demons or the toxic fruit, usually both together, might have influenced those mysteries. I'm thinking of at least two right now, and I, you know, I'm not thinking that hard. So yes.
Let's go. I love that kind of stuff. I really do. And again, we're talking about, I'm a huge nerd, obviously, and especially like when we get to time travel and all that stuff, I love that kind of stuff too. So when I saw that that's the time travel you guys are working with, I was like, oh, there's got to be some really good future alterations. And again, I can't wait to get to it, man. I love that kind of stuff. So again, Kickstarter ends in a couple days on the 9th. The volume of volumes 1 through 3, we got volume 4 in the horizon, which any specific date on when that is coming on? Or
Well, I joked about it having to be long because, you know, we've done it before. It's going to be 4 issues, which would be 13, 14, 15, and 16. Mm-hmm. Ludo has the script to start illustrating issue 16 as soon as he finishes a big art project that he's doing for, I don't know, I can't say it because I'm not sure if he's mentioned what it is, but he's got a big illustration project for a company. So, you know, they can pay him a lot better than me. So I give him my blessing and I say, go for
just
it.
Just be patient.
And, yeah. And so when we get issue 16 done, we will either, it really all depends. Are we ready to flow right into issue 17? We'll kickstart issue 17 because we want to keep the story getting out. Mm-hmm. Every time we have a chapter, we want to get it out. But if we realize, no, Ludo has to take a 4-month, you know, job. Oh, we have a hardcover collection. Let's kickstart that because we print those on the other side of the world just to keep costs down.
Yeah.
And that's 3 months of waiting for the book. We'll do that while Ludo can finish his project and start drawing the next one. But if Ludo does 16 and 17 and we've got those, we'll do the individual chapters first just to get the book done. And we assume the TART book will end around issue 27. So we're just about halfway done.
Okay. Yeah. We're just getting into the meat and potatoes of it then, man. Oh man, I cannot wait. I'm super excited. But then, so again, we talked about, you know, where this is going to end, and you just said around like issue, you know, 25, 26, but I'm curious, looking past that, are there any other collaborations with Ludo that you guys are cooking? I know you've talked about before, again, going back to the kind of differences between you guys, and sometimes when ideas don't really, you know, click with both of you, it kind of gets put into the, you know, maybe revisit that later pile. So I'm curious, are you guys planning on some more collaborations past TART, like once this story is done?
I think we both just want to finish this one. Mm-hmm. And then worry about anything else.
Yeah.
Like I'm not really working on any of my other ideas right now. It's, you know, life has gotten pretty crazy. You know, I first thought, well, I'll do 4 comics. So then every month I'll write a script and then the artist can take 3 months to draw. Mm-hmm. And then I'm always working. They're always working. We've always got a book out. And I've realized I don't even have the bandwidth to do that. So for me specifically, really, besides maybe a couple pages here or there for friends, if they say, I've got an anthology, you want to do 4 pages? Sure. Yeah, I'll do that. Mm-hmm. But I'm not really pushing on any of the ideas I have besides TART right now. Just because I would rather do one thing as well as I can than 3 things decently. Mm-hmm. So that's, my answer is Ludo and I have not spoken about it. I would personally work with and or help Ludo do anything. I love him to death. But I don't know if we will work again on something. If we did, I would not want it to be in the toxic universe. I really would like to just set up the parameters of what the world is after TART ends and let some other brains get in there. And if Ludo wants to draw it, God blesses everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of more so what I meant, like something outside of the toxic universe. But again, you know, you got their blinders on. You're just focused on, you know, finishing this, which I 100% love. And I think, what is it, Ron Swanson? He says, don't half-ass three things, whole-ass one thing. So yeah. I think that definitely applies here. But, I mean, again, I really love this book, and I need everyone to go back this. Again, we got a couple more days left, and we've already hit our goal, but again, mm-hmm. we just need people to read this because it's so good, and we got more issues coming, and I've just been having so much fun talking to you today, Kevin. I can't thank you enough for being here and talking about Tart with me, but to kind of round this all out, I just got a couple fun questions for you.
Yeah, I'm just curious.
So one thing we like to ask our guests, especially writers, is what are you reading for fun? Just, you know, when you're not working, we talk about this a lot too. Everything is inspiration and research in some form or fashion. But I mean, like when you're just trying to relax, or like I said, just watch or read something for fun, what is inspiring you and what are you loving these days?
The book that I'm currently reading right now is a retrospective by the three directors of Airplane. Zucker Abrams came together and they've basically have an oral history of the making of the first movie. So that's what I'm reading more than anything. I was really doing a good job reading there for about 2 months and then it just stopped on me. What I usually do is I'll grab two or three of the comics that I've kickstarted and just take them out and just try to read them because my reading pile is a little too high to
never ending.
So kickstarted comics, and what was it that I got? I just got the hardcover of the Miracle Man compendium. I think it's the entire Alan
the King
Moore. I think it's the first 16-17 issues that Alan Moore did.
Okay, Alan Moore, yeah.
Yeah, so I think I'd like to just pop that open, just reread that, because I haven't read that in probably a decade.
Yeah, I'm trying to get that Fourth World Omnibus. I've been looking at that for a while. That just looks so good. But
so the Fourth World, is that within Miracle Man, or is that...
Yeah, so that's like Miracle Man and like Big Barda and Darkseid, like that whole kind of vein of the DC universe.
Yeah,
the King Jack Kirby.
Yes.
But all right. Yeah, I actually, speaking of Miracle Man, this is kind of a tangent, but that's why I asked if it was Tom King's Miracle Man.
The Alan Moore Miracle Man, the British superhero, not Mr.
Okay,
Miracle.
Okay. What am I talking about here? What am I talking about? Miracle Man. Yeah, not Mr. Miracle. I'm going crazy here.
that's okay, because I have read the Mr. Miracle, and that is pretty much all I know of the Fourth World. I've read two or three DC things with Apocalypse and Granny. What's her name? I almost called her Granny Goodness. I almost called her Granny Chainsaw, like my buddy Alan Dunford, who's on Kickstarter. No, Granny Goodness.
Yeah,
that's a pretty clever character right there. Granny Goodness.
100%. Yeah, Miracle Man, Mr. Miracle. I'm supposed to be the comic nerd here. What the hell am I doing?
But it's not Marvel. I think it's okay to make a mistake about non-Marvel stuff.
So, speaking of Marvel stuff, we're speaking about the big two now. I'm curious too, you know, being an indie writer, I'm sure, again, we got the blinders on Tart. So, you know, we're focused on that. But hypothetically, in a hypothetical world, you got one of the big two, Marvel, DC, they're knocking on your door. Hey, Kevin, we want a story from you. What is a dream project for you from the big two? Again, be DC, Marvel, Dark Horse, you know, I know I said big two, but you know, the big boys, a character or kind of franchise that you would love to just get your hands on.
The only true story arc that I have for a big two character is Daredevil. It's the only one that I really know. If I got to play in this world, I would like to play with Matt doing this, that, and that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it all started with X-Men, so certainly something with the mutants, but I really prefer at least at my skill level right now, I believe that I'm better telling smaller, more concentrated stories on one character, one character interacting with another. So I'm not sure that I'm my muscles are there for a full team book like the X-Men. But, you know, I mean, I would take, you know, Kurt and Catherine Pride and play with them for a 4-issue thing if anybody let me.
Hey, Marvel, listen, let's get it going right now. I mean, what else do we need? That would be awesome. But I think that's super cool, especially Daredevil, because I mean, Daredevil is just such a great character. And I've said this before, I think while I'm the Thor guy, I think Daredevil is the best consistently written character at Marvel, at least in my opinion. Like, he's just his runs are always great.
You've got the Stan Lee run. You've got the Frank Miller run. You've got Ann Nesenti and J.R. Jr.'s run. You've got Bendis had an amazing run.
Yeah, just does not miss.
What was when they sent him to jail? That was
Chip.
No, it was before.
I would say he was just in jail in Zdarsky's run.
I missed that one. I missed, but it was before. He does the crime stuff with Sean Phillips. Ed Brubaker.
Oh, I would say Brubaker, yeah.
Brubaker's run was incredible. So, yeah, he's got amazing runs. Maybe I don't want to do Daredevil.
Well, I was going to say, too, I mean, you're talking X-Men. They have, like, I think there's, like, 100 X-books coming out right now. So I'm sure you could fit in on one of them.
Yeah, just give me 9 mutants you don't give a shit about.
But again, man, this has been so much fun. I've said it 100 times this interview, but I'll say it 100 more times. I really, really love Tart, and I'm so excited to get more into it and this world. I backed the Kickstarter, and again, I urge all of you guys to go do as well, because this is something you guys are really going to enjoy. But at this moment, Kevin, I'm going to throw it off to you, my friend. Tell the people where they can find you. I'm going to be throwing the links to the Kickstarter and all of your links in there as well, so everyone listening can find that easy. But again, tell people where they can find you and what else you got going on.
Basically, I'm on pretty much any of the social medias as Kevin Joseph CMX. So the last name is spelled J-O-S-E-P-H. So if you want to go on Twitter, Blue Sky, Hive, Instagram, I'm under that same moniker. Facebook, you can look up Tart Official, and that's our Facebook page. Reach out, and I do want to say, I want everybody to get the hardcovers. That's what the thing is. But if you want to just pop on, if you back for the $20 digital tier, I will email you a link to read the 3 issues you're talking about today before the campaign ends. If you hate it,
let's go, people. What else do you need?
If you hate it, cancel your pledge, because I've been doing this the whole time. I've had about 3 people cancel their pledge and about 40 people go to get the books. And that's math that I can handle that gamble, because we just, and honestly, I'd rather get 100 new readers any way we can get them. And I don't like digital. I like to read physical books, but I'm still a little afraid of $110, which I understand. That's a lot of money to me too. We have an appetizer catch-up tier. You can get the first 7 chapters of the book for $30 before shipping. So, and by then you're going to know. You're going to know I screwed up because I should have gotten the hardcovers. And that's okay. You can hand those off to somebody else and buy the hardcovers later.
100%. And I mean, again, just goes to show that you guys care about your backers, you care about the readers, and it's all about getting this story out there into the people's hands. And I mean, how can you not support that? Again, hit up Kevin, catch up on Tart. I'm doing my homework. And again, I'm back in the Kickstarter, so you all should too. Again, Kevin, I got to thank you so much for being here with me today. This has been so much fun. And of course, anytime you want to come back, you are always welcome.
All right, the next Thor movie, I'll come on the week before.
Yes, let's do it.
We'll talk about what we're excited about.
Dude, let's just do a Thor episode. Let's just nerd out about Thor. We got to get to all the Tart stuff this time, but you know me. I'm always down to clown, my friend.
I'll nerd out to Thor. We'll see if my wife can get her own computer and she can come in strong on Loki, because that's what got her into the nerd.
Okay,
I like this villain. I'm like, all right, that's cool.
Hell yeah. I guess I got to ask you before we get out of here. So we've been doing on the channel a Loki after show, and all, sure. We're in the Loki era right now. Are you watching Loki?
I am absolutely watching Loki. We are 1 week behind. We did not see last night. So we're talking baby. On a Friday.
Okay. There, you're in for it.
Yeah. So that will probably be what we watch in the next, you know, maybe dinner, but whatever. So yeah, my daughter has dance Thursday nights. So it's tough.
It's hard
tough
to get fit home it in.
At 10 and watch something. If they would just release it in, you know, Wednesday during the day or Thursday during the day, we could watch it at, you know, before dance, but
Disney come on, doesn't Marvel, make their decisions get your stuff on together. Yeah, yeah. They need to start though. What the hell are they doing? But that's awesome. I've been, like I said, we've been doing a Loki kind of after show and we're living in this Loki era, and you mentioned Loki. So I had to ask you if you're watching the show. It's so good.
I am, and one of my favorite movies of all time is Bottle Rocket. So being able to use Owen Wilson to kind of entice my daughter to watch that last week and her absolutely loving it, I was just like, you know, thank you again, Loki, for that.
Yeah.
You just, because it's a weird movie if you've never seen it. It's odd.
Yeah.
But knowing Mobius, like, here's just Mobius 20 years ago. Maybe it's the variant. I don't know.
Owen Wilson's such a gem. I love his Mobius is so great. But we're going to have to come back and talk Loki and Thor and all that stuff. But again, I got to thank you for being here, man. It's been so much fun. If you guys enjoyed this conversation, please consider giving us a like and subscribe. And hey, who knows? Leave us a comment. We love comments. I'll even shoot them over to Kevin himself and he can respond and I'll respond on his behalf. But other than that, I think that's really all we got for you. Go back, Tart. Again, all those links are going to be in the description for you. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. Stay hydrated, and I hope your stacks are fat. See y'all next time.
I can do this all day.